Praise God. Well, I'm really excited to be able to and honored to be able to close off the Let's Get Real series, except we have the Q&A next week, but to close off the actual messages. For those of you who don't know that God put it on our hearts to do a month where we were actually specifically speaking to real issues that people have in the real world and ways that we could help. So we asked people to submit questions, and obviously we couldn't in 4 weeks, you know, tackle all of them, but each of the pastoral team were given one question, and this was mine, and I have been really excited as I've studied it out and lived it out and let it actually change me first, because if it doesn't change me, then I've got no right to be standing here and preaching it to you. And I can honestly say it has. So I got given living satisfied. So it was something that there was obviously sub-questions that went with it. But living satisfied, how many people go through their life unsatisfied, always looking for the next big thing? It doesn't matter what's happening, there's always something bigger on the horizon. But that's not how God wants us to live. He wants us to live enjoying our lives on a daily basis and enjoying where we are. So I began to say, Lord, can you show me why are people generally perpetually unsatisfied and what causes us to be unsatisfied? So I love English. I love looking at meanings and root words and all this kind of stuff. So I've spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks, first of all, finding out what does the word satisfied mean. So the word satisfied means to be pleased or content with what has been experienced or received. To be pleased, delighted, happy, glad, and thankful. If you're satisfied, you're contented and you don't need any more. You know, if you're eating a meal and you're full, you're satisfied, you can kind of sit there thinking, that was really nice, I'm fine. I don't have to take one more portion or get one more thing. I'm satisfied. And so you're sitting there not complaining, you're happy, and that all your requirements have been met and nothing more needs to be done. Basically, that's when a person is satisfied. I'm satisfied when all the baskets in my laundry are empty. I very rarely ever see it, but I am satisfied when all the baskets in my laundry. Yesterday, for the first time in a long time, I was on my own all day. The rest of the family were all at the church all day, or Jay was working. The others were here all day, literally setting up the super kid rooms. I had the house to myself, and I got through 8 baskets of washing. And at the end of the day, I was satisfied. I have got no washing. I told my family, that's it. Don't wear clothes for a while. I'm done. No, I didn't actually say the second part, okay? So I felt contented because my laundry was clean. I felt contented because every basket of laundry was done. I wasn't complaining and I felt quite overjoyed. So when you're satisfied, it means your current requirements have been met. In the Bible, satisfied primarily refers to spiritual contentment and fulfillment found in God and in His provision, rather than mere physical or material fullness. The Hebrew word saba, I don't speak Hebrew, so whichever way you want to say it is okay with me, is often translated as satisfied, meaning to have enough or to be filled. It's a feeling of being fulfilled, fully content, like the feeling at the end of a satisfying meal, or for me, a satisfying laundry day. So the word that is the closest in meaning is the word content. And a content person is someone who is satisfied with their current situation, not necessarily striving to get ahead or to looking for something beyond the present. It is an emotional state of ease. That's how I felt last night, an emotional state of ease. I may not feel that next week when I look at the ironing, but when it comes to the laundry, I feel an emotional state of ease. So other people, even Christians, can look on a person who is satisfied critically, because they can say, if you're satisfied and content, you're not pushing ahead. You're not going after more. You're settling for the status quo. So what is, there's two tensions here, there's two truths. What is the actual truth in the middle of it all? There's a famous song from a movie that I love. My daughter, both my daughters love it, even probably more, The Greatest Showman. And that says, one of the lines says, or one of the song says, all the shine of 1,000 spotlights, all the stars we steal from the night sky will never be enough. Never be enough. Towers of gold are still too little. These hands could hold the whole world, but it will never be enough for me. And then the chorus just says, never, 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 never enough for me. What a sad message, but such a worldview. Okay, how many people know people in their lives that are like that? You must always be striving, never stopping, because nothing is ever enough. If I get $1,000, that's not enough. If I get $100,000, that's not enough. If I get a particular job, it's not enough. I want to climb higher in the firm. If I get particular clothes, it's not enough. I need more. I need a coat to go with it. Do you understand this concept, which is very prevalent and is very much a current worldview, that never enough, never enough. And so that means that it's very hard for us to live satisfied. So, you know, it says Paul himself battled with these two sides of the coin. And I loved, this is something I've been studying out the last week. If you can put up for me, please, Sam, Philippians 3, verses 12 to 14. It says, not that I have already attained this, I have not already been perfected, but I strive to lay hold of that for which Christ Jesus also laid hold of me. Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself to have attained. Instead, I am single-minded, forgetting the things that are behind and reaching for the things that are ahead. With this goal in mind, I strive toward the prize of the upward call of Jesus Christ. So Paul is really talking about it's not enough. I'm pressing forward. But then a chapter later, Paul says in Philippians 4, verse 11 to 12, not that I am implying that I am in personal want, for I have learned how to be content, satisfied to the point where I am not disturbed or disquieted, whatever state I am in. I know how to be abased and live humbly in circumstances, and I know how to enjoy plenty and live in abundance. I have learned in any and all circumstances the secret of facing every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, having sufficiency and enough to spare, or going without and being in want. So that is two totally different sides of the coin. And I appreciate the fact that Paul was basically, my take is, Paul knew how to be satisfied.
Yeah, so good.
Paul was content, but he wasn't complacent.
Yeah, that's good.
Paul was content in any circumstance, but he was also not complacent. Yeah. He was pushing ahead to what God called him to be. Yeah. And so many times we feel we either have to be, yeah, we have to be content. And God wants us to be content. He wants us to be satisfied, but he doesn't want us being complacent. Because the other song that you could easily sing in this situation is one that David actually did a voice of this last year or the year before when we had Pastor Eric Deaton here. And I was watching it the other day and the two of you had a sing-off. And he said, "Kay, sarah, sarah, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Kay, sarah, sarah." Basically, it means it's the status quo. Just whatever happens will happen. And so I love the fact that I don't believe Paul was singing from The Greatest Showman, Never Enough. I don't believe he was singing from Doris Day, Kay, sarah, sarah. Paul was saying in the middle of these two is how God wants us to live, to be content but not to be complacent, to be satisfied but to be always pushing forward. And there is a huge difference, and that Paul managed to live between those two truths. So if he can, then I believe we can. Always pressing on, but always focusing on more, but totally embracing and living the now. So grateful for what I've got today, but not so grateful that I'm just sitting here saying, que sera, sera, this is it. But look, knowing that there is more God's got for me in my life, but every day being satisfied and enjoying what I'm living in. And I believe if that's how Paul lived, that's how God wants us to live, if he wants us to be satisfied. Amen. Joyce Meyer has written a book, and I highly recommend it, Enjoying Where You Are on the Way to Where You're Going. I remember when I was probably a teenager, the Lord started to speak to me about this. And I was reading a devotional book once that had been given to me. I was maybe 14, 15. And they quoted a true story of a man that had been given, or a young man that had been given a boat from his parents. It was a small boat, like a kind of a dinghy boat. Is that what they call them? I'm not really a boat person. And he was so excited to take it and show everybody at youth group, and to take the youth and all of his friends out, because he had a boat. He had this little dinghy that they would go out in. And he said for a while it was great, until they met somebody from another church who had a bigger boat. He had a motorboat. And suddenly he was looking at his little boat, which he had been satisfied with, and he had loved it. But then he saw this other person who had a bigger boat, a better boat, a motorboat. And so then now he totally lost interest. He stopped taking his little boat because he was embarrassed. And I remember the devotional said, don't stop the joy you have of your little boat while you're waiting for your bigger boat to come. And, you know, I remember as a teenager, that so helped me. It didn't matter what season in life I was in, there was always something more, but there was always something to be satisfied with. You know, it's the same as people say, I'll be happy, you know, I'll be happy when I'm dating. You know, you've got somebody single, when I'm dating. I only want to date. Then when they date, I'll only be happy when we're married. When we're married, I'll only be happy when we have kids. You know, when you've got kids, I'll only be happy when I have more kids. It just goes on and on. Yet if we are going to live satisfied lives, we need to learn that tension that Paul did. I am totally content in whatever, in the season I'm in, yet I'm also always pushing forward. So today I want to show us how to live satisfied while we are still waiting for our breakthroughs and while we are still believing. Because God does want us to enjoy the journey, not just the destination. And, you know, when I was thinking about this, I thought, as an adult traveling overseas, I don't travel as much as Jasmine and Chris's parents do, and so maybe you like traveling better than me. But, you know, to me, it's all about the destination. It's not about the journey. I'm not really hugely a plane person. You know, I said I travel on them because you have to. But I remember when we went to America with the whole family for the first time, 17 and a half hour trip we had from Melbourne to Dallas. That's a long time to be in a plane. And I remember that for me, it was always how can I get through this 17 and a half hours? It's like, I just want to be there. I just want to be there. I just want this over with. And I honestly believe that maybe that they made those in-flight entertainment screens where they can actually show you exactly where you're going and how far you've got to go and how far you've come from. They probably made them for me. So I remember sitting there and thinking 1 or 2 hours into the trip, I'm going to play these mind games. You know, I'm going to shut that screen down, and I'm not going to look at it for ages, and I'm not going to look at my watch, and then I'm going to open it, and I'm going to be so excited to know how far we've gone. It didn't work. When I opened it and I looked at it, I thought, oh my goodness, there's 14 hours to go. This is not funny, you know. And yet my four kids were loving it. that from the moment they arrived at the airport, from the moment they get on the plane, they loved it. It was so exciting. You know, it was, to them, the holiday had started when we arrived at Tullamarine Airport. For me, the holiday wasn't starting until we landed at Dulles. Because, you know, like, to me, this is, the journey. And God wants us to enjoy the journey. You know, my kids even like the bathrooms in planes. I hate them. They're so small and squashy and, But, you know, it's the difference. And yesterday when I was praying, the Lord said, sadly, we can become so fixated on the destination that we don't enjoy the journey. Amen. We lose the joy of what the you know, all of my children, but particularly Caitlin, the anticipation she has with all the things she's going to do on the plane. She has a to-do list on the plane. She has everybody there. She's excited, you know. And I said, I'm just like, just get me there. Get me off this big thing. You know, get me there to the other side. And that, and so somehow the Lord wants us to live our life, as I said, between those two tensions of being satisfied but pressing in. Being content but not being complacent. And that he wants us to enjoy the journey, not just a destination. So today I want to speak about the three enemies of satisfaction. The first one is comparison. Comparison, it's everybody says, is the greatest thief of joy. And it is true. Always comparing yourself to somebody else will only lead to dissatisfaction and envy. And that this comparison can totally take, like that story of the boat. I look at my little boat and I'm having a great time. Then I look at somebody else's big boat and it's like, oh, yeah, this is nothing. You know, I'm comparing my little boat to their big boat. And sadly, we live in a society where comparison is huge. We have abilities to compare like no other generation has had. The second thing, and I'm going to go down and speak to each of these, but the second one is unchecked ambition. While ambition can drive success, an overemphasis on achieving more can lead to burnout, can lead to wrong priorities, and definitely cause you to live unsatisfied. If you are constantly so ambitious that, you know, like once I get that promotion, once I become the VP, you know, that's the big thing on Hallmarks. Everybody becomes a VP, you know. Once you become the VP, then I'll be satisfied. But no, because then you want to become the president. Then you want to become the CEO. You know, there's always more. So ambition is good, but unchecked ambition is not healthy. And that. And the third one is addiction. Not having control over doing, taking, or using something. If anything in your life has become an addiction, it doesn't matter how many times you view it, consume it, take it, it will never be enough and you will never be satisfied. And even though you can experience a degree of happiness, you will simultaneously feel a lack of fulfillment because it's never, ever enough. And as I've prayed, the Lord has really showed me that he said these three things, if we can today recognize them, recognize what they are in your life, what they are in my life, and if we can get these three areas, comparison, unchecked ambition and addiction under control, then that will help us to live a satisfied life. It doesn't matter what is happening around us. And that, I think it was Pastor Peter who did a series a while ago, Unsatisfied Satisfaction. And I loved it, Unsatisfied Satisfaction. I haven't got everything, but I'm totally satisfied as I'm going towards that. So today we're going to look at each of these areas, and to start with, we're going to gate crash a dinner or a coffee catch up between two friends. Now, these two friends, I may just move backwards. I don't know if this is going to be okay. Joe, just so everybody can see. Okay, these two friends have gone to primary school together, high school, uni, but they haven't seen each other for 5 years. So I would like you, you've both got microphones, just to listen, to watch, and to see. They're going to the Zeitgeist Cafe. So just go and see in relation to what we've said about living between the two tensions and the things which will stop satisfaction.
I didn't know she said that. Okay, well, I'm sending you the email right now. If you can get the numbers back to me, that would be great.
Oh, ambition! Ambition over here!
The parasite! Okay, I gotta go. Right, yeah, okay, I'll send you the email now.
Better side. So good, press that real quick. So good to see you.
I'm so glad to be seeing you. Just have to send a quick email. How are you?
Yes, so good to see you.
Do you see the stock numbers coming in? Oh, apples on the rise.
Stop it.
That's what our stock people talk about. Wow. Very exciting. I'm just going to place
hey,
that
I just,
right there.
I was just posting out a photo. Did you see that Sally went is in LA?
I did see Sally.
Sally's in LA. Oh, my goodness.
I'm looking at the LA figures at the moment. Hold on, can I show you the news? Did you see what happened in LA the other day?
I'd love a holiday to LA.
The photos are phenomenal. Hold on, I just need to actually quickly grab this email.
But that's okay. That's fine.
I'm actually in the midst of, I want to go to LA because I want to try to, I want to write a story about LA, but I haven't had time at the moment.
That's cool.
But if I keep an eye on the numbers,
4 weeks of holiday,
which reminds me, I should send that email. Hold on, sorry. I think Sharon is waiting for that. And I'm so, how are you? It's so good to be seeing you.
That's okay.
Yeah. What's been new in your life? So, have you got any?
I'm also going
sorry,
on holidays.
I'll be right back. I'm also going on holidays.
You too. I'm going to Shepparton next weekend. That'll be nice.
That's great.
Yeah, it'll be
great.
Nice.
What are your goals for the future? Have you been doing anything
so
in business? Stop it. He didn't say that. Have you seen this new tweet?
Oh, that meal looks good, actually.
That meal looks a bit nicer.
Should I have got that meal?
Actually, excuse me, wait, I'm just on a new diet. Could I please switch this to almond milk? Thank you. Did I tell you I'm training for a marathon?
It's got 11 views.
That's great.
I just posted it now, 11 views.
You should see when I do my, I'm going to do a marathon later this year. And I'm thinking once I do my marathon, that's when the numbers will really kick in.
Stacey's got 25.
I've actually started a blog.
Stacey's has got 25
views. Are you following my blog? I'm not sure if you did.
60 followers.
So it's a new blog that I'm starting about fitness, wellness, all numbers,
I've got 52
stock,
followers
spreadsheets,
on mine.
Coding.
That's okay.
I kind of tap into all the different
really
markets.
I'm really happy for you to have
my thought is by the end of the year,
me.
If I can have
did
at least 500.
Did you get your parents to follow you? I'm just going to have a look.
If you can check, they do, because I'm thinking once I do my marathon, that's when I really should be able to hit into the fitness journey.
Oh, running. But, yeah. I'd love to run. I don't have time to run.
Don't find this weird. I'm just trying
you're
to
healthy.
Have a step challenge.
I'm trying to be healthy. I'm not healthy, but that's okay because I've got no time to be healthy. But that would, I'd love to have the time
teams.
That you have to be able to put into being
they're
healthy.
Going down.
I would have time if I didn't have to make
and
breakfast
then,
for everyone, clean up breakfast for everyone, put the dishes
on, put the
washing on.
And my thought is that once I started putting the numbers onto
fine.
The blog,
yeah, I'm so,
I feel like that's what people are really looking for.
I should be more healthy. I really have not been healthy enough.
Oh, gosh, Amazon's got a sale.
I should be doing more.
Do you ever put things into your cart and then you wait and see if they're going to give you a sale? I do it every week. Not only Amazon deals.
I would if I, like, you know, had enough money to buy things myself. But all the money we've got goes to everyone else in the family. Great. I'd love to spend $100 on petrol, not $100 on something in Amazon. Yeah, thanks. But that's, I'm great.
Once that number
clearly, you've
in,
got more money than
Amazon
me,
deals.
So that's fine.
Have you tried Temu as well?
Have you
that's
got
where
more...
you can get some cheaper things. I'm
do you
saving
Temu?
For
I'll get Temu as well. Did you I've
I'm
got something
for
else.
I'm saving America at the moment, so
well,
not if I can try to just cut out any money. So my thought is,
that's great.
Waiter, I've got a coupon for this.
Yeah, no, that's
at the moment,
great.
Every cent counts.
Did you get, have you
every
got two coffees?
Counts.
I'll get two coffees and
no,
two.
I'm only going to get the one because
I'll get two as well.
I've got $4.
Oh, one, no, one coffee as well.
Cash?
I'll just
got,
get one.
I'm trying to use up all my coins and my tokens.
That's fine.
Let
oh, great, that's a nice bag. I've got my...
It's beautiful.
That's a nice bag. It's a big bag.
Yeah, I need to take my laptop.
Yeah, really, that's a bigger bag than
oh,
my
no,
bag.
Oh, did I not bring
okay.
my iPad? I might need to go to the car and get my iPad.
I'll get that one. That's
you know,
fine.
Actually,
I don't want that bag
I've been
anymore.
Listening
it's
to
fine.
A TED Talk recently.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating. Well,
I'd love to have
I can't
time to
exactly
listen
remember
to things.
What I heard
I just don't have any time. Everyone else in my
running,
life seems to have time.
Sending emails
except
and listening to it.
If I
was on 2-point speed. But it was
I would listen to things
something about relationships and about how people are our greatest...
Yeah, no.
something. But it was inspiring. I found it inspiring, and I was thinking of writing a blog on it, actually.
Yeah, well, I would love to have time to write a blog. Yeah, I put that up.
You know what? In this crazy world we live in, Hannah, she should write notes on this.
Wow, Stacey's post is up to 65. Mine's only up to 14 now. Do you think the algorithms don't like me?
Something.
I think maybe my algorithms are different to Stacey's.
People is what it's all about. We should get a photo for that.
Yeah, yeah.
My idea would be if I could do a TED Talk, then my blog would really take off and the numbers would be amazing.
Who's Ted? Was he from our class?
Very well done. Thank you so much. Okay, so this is one of my daughters, and she is unchecked
ambition.
They're both my daughters. Unchecked ambition and comparison. So give them a hand. They did amazing.
But did I do a little bit better than unchecked?
Yeah.
Just which one was better? Great. I think she thought that
was
better.
I was teaching a class this week.
I think she thought mine was actually better. That's great.
Oh, dear. Okay. I hope that just gave you a funny way of understanding how comparison and unchecked ambition can come into our lives on a daily basis. That you saw them, that they were stalking their old classmates on social media, comparing their friends' lives to theirs. They were comparing their dining experiences and their coffee with somebody else. They were taking lots of photos for socials, and then they were going to start editing them so that they would look good or better than their old classmates. And then they were even comparing their meals and the nutritional value. They were complaining about their mundane lives, and they were checking and comparing likes on social media. That, obviously, that is overacted, but sadly, it's extremely true. Sadly, it is totally, totally true. You cannot sit in a restaurant these days without seeing many people get out their phones and take selfies or take a photo of their food and then sit there and edit it and put filters on it and then post it. And that I heard a pastor say the other day, you can't prove it till you've posted it, basically, now. You know, and that's the way that we live. And the fact of the unchecked ambitions, they were catching up after 5 years, but Brooke was continually on the phone, continually checking numbers. I don't know if you noticed, she had one AirPod in so that she was prepared to take incoming calls. How many times have you seen this kind of thing? Hopefully you haven't been a part of it, but how many times have you seen this kind of thing? You're sitting there and people are just sitting at a table next to you, and they're on their phones, they're on their iPads, they're on their computers, they're talking on their AirPods, but they're not actually talking to the person who's with them at all. Looking at notifications, not just social media notifications, looking at Amazon sales, check prices in carts, checking work rosters, and that all the time, finding out what other classmates have been earning so they know what they should be earning. This skit powerfully portrays why so many in our people in our world live unsatisfied. One of the things is that they compare their lives, their unfiltered lives, with the filtered version that everybody else puts up on social media. You know, they compare their, you know, people don't generally put up a picture of their messy house. They put up a picture of their tidy house. But it could have taken hours to get it to that. But then you look at it, and then you're looking at your house. I said the comparing is becoming so such a big thing in our world because of social media. And I am not against social media. I use it. It has a purpose. But it can also be used incredibly wrong. And that social media allows you to see everyone else's filtered picture-perfect highlights and compare it to your behind-the-scenes raw cutting room floor footage. So also the constant availability of news, good, bad, or something that doesn't even affect you at all, fills your mind, clutters you all the time. I wonder what's going to happen. I wonder what's going to happen. It could be something that's happened to a sportsman, a politician, a country, an actor, anybody. Nobody that you know, but you get hooked in. Yeah. And no longer do you have to wait, till nighttime at 6 o'clock if you watch the news, or till you buy a paper on the way home. You can follow it almost in real time. you know, you can follow what's happened. And that, and the thing is, it becomes a hook. Yeah. It, you know, I don't want to be the last one to know what the result was. Yeah. I don't want to be the last one to know how long that person, that player's been suspended for. I don't want to be the last one to know, you know, what's happening in this country. And it becomes something which is cluttering more than anything else. Now, you may, like I've mentioned three things which I believe stop us living satisfied lives. One of them is unchecked ambition. One of them is comparison. The third one was addiction. And even though I didn't have a third person there, addiction was very, very strongly being represented in both their lives. Yeah. Because sadly, with the technology that we have now, and I am not anti-technology, please understand that. I am so grateful for my phone. I'm so grateful for all the things that technology has opened up. While I'm preaching, people in Texas are watching it because of technology. Tomorrow morning when I get up, I will be watching Eagle Mountain and Heritage of Faith in Crowley because of technology. So technology is wonderful, but it is also a double-edged sword. And, you know, one of the things that technology is pushing more and more is multitasking. Yeah. And I was reading a study by somebody who was a lot smarter than me this week.
Comparison.
I didn't mind comparing myself because I wouldn't have wanted to do the years of study that he did, but yes, I did. And he said it is actually from a medical and psychological point of view, it is impossible to multitask. He said you actually have to task swap. Your brain cannot have a whole lot of tasks happening at the same time because it was not created to do that. And he said our brains were designed not to be thinking or processing more than one thing at a time. So what we call multitasking is actually making our brains jump from side to side to side. And as scientists have said and proved, I don't know how they do it, but I'm not going to argue with them, that they said it takes the brain 25 minutes to properly switch direction and focus on a new task. So if you are multitasking, what are you doing to your mind? What are you doing to your emotions? Because you are just filling it with all this stuff. Now, when they, I'm a mum, I'm a pastor's wife, I've got four kids. And that I've given birth to four kids. Now we've got two extras. There's two of them. We got married. We've got grandkids in the family. And that multitasking, I'm not talking about me folding laundry while I'm listening to a sermon, okay? I don't mean that kind of thing. Yes, that is possible. It doesn't take a lot of brain power to fold laundry and that, or it shouldn't. And that, so if I'm doing a mundane task like that, that's not a problem. But... sorry, some of the boys are concerned about that. And that fitted sheets are very hard to fold. I roll mine. But all I'm saying is that to be able to be multitasking, where literally you've got a whole lot of things that you're doing. You're trying to think, I'm answering that question, I'm doing that, I'm writing those notes, I'm putting that, I'm da 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 da. You are making your brain just jump around, and it is not designed to do that. So then we stop and think, what are we doing to ourselves? Why are we not living satisfied? There's obviously a lot of reasons for it. And that, so as I said, even though I only had my two girls representing two of the things I said, the third one was well represented, and that was addiction. I was really saddened to find out that, and please do a disclaimer again, I'm not against modern technology, but they said phones, smartphones, are now in the top 10 addictions in the world. They said across the world, smartphones are in the top 10 addictions, with drugs, alcohol above them, but they're actually very, very, very high up. And they said they've become so addictive that they've actually got their own medical name now, which is called nomophobia. And it is recognised in all the medical reports and places around the world, all the scientific reports. Nomophobia is the fear of no mobile or no mobile coverage. And according to, again, stats which have come from people a lot smarter than me, and it's across the board, they claim that that at least 87% of the world suffer from nomophobia because their phones have become such an important part of their lives. And as I said, if it wasn't for technology, so this is not an anti-technology message, please understand. I don't want us to go back to the previous ages. I was going to say the dark ages. You know, like I can keep in contact with friends in America on a daily basis or a weekly basis, whereas years ago I used to have to write a letter. And for any kids who are here, write a letter. It's probably a foreign thing. Go and buy a stamp and put it in the letterbox, and it would take 10 days to get there, and then they would write one back. And so, you know, like the whole corresponding, you could correspond once roughly in a month if you were... Yeah, so I'm not wanting to go back. I love FaceTime. I love Zoom. I love all the things that it has and that. But one of the things I believe is if we're going to live satisfied lives, we have to learn how to be the adults in the relationship with technology. We have to be in control of it, not let it control us. You don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater you know, it's a very strange term, but I know it's always used. I never threw out any of my babies. So, but I'm saying there's got to be the fact that we have to learn to say this is amazing what, you know, what people have been able to come up with in modern technology, but how do we stop it from changing our lives and being so addictive and that? And one of the things that they said iPhones and smartphones have done is they've made us addicted to noise and busyness because you can do whatever you want, you know. Now, I would like to, just for a purpose, if I could get maybe Brooke, or Peter, if you want to come and help me. You can be my assistant. Welcome my assistant up here on the platform. Okay.
Am I better than the other two?
No comment.
Oh. The answer
is yes. Yes. Okay. I had fun last night going through our house. I'll try to pull this back so we can see it as much as we can. And that. So I'm going to get my lovely assistant here to show you some of these things. And that I managed to find my dad's old mobile. This was not a smartphone. This is called a brick and that. But he loved his mobile. You're going to bring it out the front? Just don't fall off. Okay. So here we have a lot of things. Okay. We have a telephone. I thought I had a real telephone, but I couldn't find one. We have a CD player. We have CDs. We have a world map. We have a radio, transistor radio, and that. We have videos. We have a camera. We have headphones. You can wear them if you like.
We're going to get this is what you really use a phone for.
Yeah. We have a day planner. We have a cassette Walkman. Okay. We have a CD Walkman. These were all mine. We have cassettes to put in the Walkman. We have a newspaper. Now, do you know yesterday I went to buy a newspaper for this prop and found out they cost $4.50. I was like, you've got to be joking. I haven't bought a newspaper for years. At least Collingwood once, so there was something decent to read in it. But seriously, we have a world globe, like a map. We have a clock. We have French for dummies. Okay, if you want to learn French. We have a game, Thunderbird's Monopoly. Thunderbirds are go. Okay? We have a TV and a video player. We also have photos, a photo album. Oh, okay. We have a photo album. This is mine and Peter's trip to America in 1991, if you want to have a look. Okay, we have a little photo album, in case that one doesn't fit in the handbag. All these things have been replaced in a smartphone. Okay? I can make calls on it, which is probably the thing you do the least. I can find the time on it. I've got my Duolingo app, and I can learn how to speak. I've got a camera. I've got photos. I've got, I won't tell you how many thousand photos I've got on my phone. I'm embarrassed. But it's over 30,000. Okay? So, like, I can take 30,000 photos with me. Imagine taking 100 of these with me. And that, I've got, who needs a radio? Who needs to spend $4.50 on a newspaper? And that, I can listen to podcasts. I don't need to sit there with earphones on. Before anybody gets a photo. I don't need to walk around with a Walkman. Yeah. I have maps which direct me. Yeah. I can find the time. I can find the time anywhere in the world, yeah. Not just in Melbourne where I'm living. Yeah. I can play games. I don't need to take a board game on the bus. I've got games on my phone. So the phone, and I can watch movies. I can watch YouTube. I can do anything I want. So all these things have been replaced by our smartphones. You imagine getting in the bus. Originally, I wanted to do a skit where I got Jordan to come up and to try to pack all this stuff into a backpack and to see how he could go getting on the train with his map and his camera and his French for Dummies and his... But once we got to the TV, we thought, nah, this isn't going to work. This is going to work. This is one of the reasons why technology has become so addictive. I never took a board game on the bus when I went into the city. I never took a big map like this. I did have Walkmans. And that, like, you wouldn't consider taking all this stuff with you. But on your phone, you've got it all. So you play the game, you read the news, you listen to the message, you know, you get directions. You do all this in... And so there is a constant ability to be hearing noise, to be gathering information. And what it means is that we're never actually off. We're always on. We're so used to having information and communication at our fingertips that we get to the point where we can't live without it. That we check notification, we get footy scores, we do the shopping, we get the news, we do all of that. But what it's stopping us is from being satisfied. It says in the Bible in Psalm 46, verse 10, "Be still and know that I am God." In the Amplified Bible, it says, "Let be and be still." In the NET Bible, it says, "Stop consistently striving and know that I am God." Modern technology is pushing us away from stillness and promoting constant noise. And it said, let me reiterate, I am not against modern technology. But one of the things that also phones take you away from where you are, you are no longer present with the people that you're there. You're no longer present in the situation. Last week, this is honest, the Lord challenged me as I prepared this message to go to our local shopping centre, Knox, and to walk from one end, which is, they call it the ozone, all the way down to the other end, which is where Woolworths is. It's a fairly expansive area. To walk down there and to count how many people, and this was midday, were either standing or waiting for people or standing outside a shop or sitting in any of the sitting areas or in the food court that were not on devices. Okay? I counted 7. And there was hundreds of people. I walked through the food court and struggled to find anybody. And even when there was 3 or 4 people at the table, they've all got devices. And I'm seeing people outside the supermarket, obviously waiting for wives or husbands or somebody to come out. And they're all standing there. They're all on devices. And that people are passing you by every day, but we're not connecting with them. And you know, the Lord took me to the story of the Good Samaritan. And if you can put it up for me, Sam, Luke 10, verse 30 to 34. I'm sure you know the story, where it says, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, they beat him and went away, leaving him dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place, saw him and passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. And you know the rest of the story. God said to me the other day as I was praying, he said, in today's society, many good Samaritans would ignorantly pass the hurting person because they're busy scrolling their Facebook feed. How many people have we passed that God wanted us to connect with? Or how many times have we been sitting at a shopping centre or somewhere and there's somebody there that God wants us to connect with, but we're all on our phones, we're all on our iPads? Again, I cannot say enough, I'm not against modern technology. I am grateful that because of it I can listen to sermons wherever that I am. I'm grateful that I can do my grocery shop with a calculator so that I'm from my phone so I know how much I'm spending. I'm grateful that I can take photos wherever I am. I don't need to make sure I have my camera. But I want to live in a state of satisfaction. And to do that, I have to make sure I'm the adult in the relationship with my phone. And I'm the adult in the relationship with modern technology. And that means I choose when I use it. I don't want the voices of the world to be constantly filling my mind through apps and I miss out on hearing from Jesus.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't want my phone to be the first hello or the last good night.
Yeah,
I want to live a life that so pleases God, that is so, and I am so present with God and present with those I am with. I want to unclutter my mind and turn down the noise because I want to see people.
Yeah.
I don't want to miss the hurting person that God has put in my path because I'm too busy reading somebody else's Facebook post about how they help somebody.
Yeah, so true.
I'm not against social media. I love it because I believe it's an amazing tool for evangelism. But again, I have to set boundaries. And scrolling social media all day is not going to benefit me or anybody else in my life. And, you know, finally, the Lord said to me yesterday when I was praying, he said, there's nothing wrong with eating one donut, but there is something wrong with eating 10. And unless you're my son. And one of the things that God was saying is that there's nothing wrong with social media, there's nothing wrong with phones, but let's do it in a way that's not like eating 10 donuts.
Yeah.
You know, I have set myself, even before I was given this topic to speak on, I'd set myself boundaries. All of our family have gone through many times of sabbaticals from social media. We'll go, you know, just for whatever reason God puts on our heart, 2 or 3 weeks, we won't go on it. And that, but even on a regular basis, I say, I have a time when I check my notifications and that's it. Sometimes it is once a day, sometimes it's only once a week. Just depends what God's doing in my life. But I will still, as I said, I keep a hand on it, but it doesn't control me. I control it. I want to free up my mind to be peaceful and to enjoy being satisfied. I don't want to be doing things, cluttering my mind and cluttering everything so that I'm always comparing. You know, as I said, there's nothing wrong with any of these apps. I'm not saying get rid of them. I'm not saying throw your phones out. I'm just saying that we need to say, God, this major technology has been given to us. How can we use it for the gospel? How can we use it to make our lives easier? But how can we be the ones that are in control, not allowing the technology to be in control of us? How can we use social media to touch people for Jesus, but make sure that we're not filling our heart with jealousy and we're comparing ourselves, comparing ourselves to everybody else who's on there. How can we live like Paul between these two tensions? You know, we want to live a life that we're satisfied, but we're pushing ahead. And I really believe that, you know, one of the things God has said to me, for the person or the people who ask the question, how can I live satisfied? I think it is stopping and reevaluating your life. It's reevaluating the time that you spend on things like technology. And it's freeing up my mind to be peaceful, to actually enjoy silence. You know, yesterday, it's very rare that I ever have a day home on my own. And yesterday I was home because, as I said, Jay was working all day. The rest of the family were at the church all day setting up the super kids. And so my first go-to was, I'm going to put music on, I'm going to put a message on, I'm going to hit the laundry, you know, and that. And then I felt the Lord say, why don't you not put anything on? And I was like, oh, that's weird. Our house is never quiet. And that, but you know what? I had the most amazing day. Yeah. And I heard God speaking. There's nothing wrong with music. There's nothing wrong with messages. I listen to them. But it's the same thing, just keeping things in keeping the control over all these things, not letting them control you. Good. You know, last night I never preach a message. If I know somebody else's preached message is similar to what I'm going to speak on, I always don't listen to them until after I've prepared mine, because I don't want to ever just be an echo. But I had totally finished preparing my message, and so last night when I was still on my own, I thought, I felt, sit down. And I thought there was a speaker, Craig Grishel, who I knew spoke very well on this subject. I thought I'd be interested to hear what he said, because I haven't heard him. And I listened to him, and he made a statement which really affected me, and when my family got home, I was telling them. He said that this figure has come from Apple, so it hasn't. This is not just something which has been derived. Apple said the average person spends 4 hours a day on their smartphone. He said, if you live an average life, that means that you will spend 7 years of your life on your phone. And when I thought that, I'm like, it just amazed me. And he said, when we look at technology, and he said, you pick up something like a phone or iPad, and you're thinking, imagine 7 years of an average life if you do. Now, then I stopped and thought, Lord, I definitely don't spend 4 hours a day, definitely. So I must be well below average, and that in that area. But I must be well below average. But then I thought, somebody else must be a lot higher. Yeah. And I started to think of people in our church. I thought, I can't think of a lot of people I think who would spend 4 hours on a device. So then you think, what are other people spending? Yeah. If they're saying, and they're basing that on the numbers that they get from apps. This is not just a, let's pull out some numbers. This is, they said, based on the usage of apps, they said that every average person would have to spend four hours a day on their device, which would add up to 7 years in total. That you've given 7 years of your life, right, basically, to doing that. I thought, Lord, I don't want that to be me. And, you know, I just want to finish and know that if the band are coming up, it says in Luke 10, verse 38, and this was the last thing the Lord spoke to me about yesterday. He said, now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him as a guest. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he said. But Martha was distracted with all the preparation she had to make. And she came to him and said, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work alone? Tell her to help me. But the Lord answered and he said, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed. Mary has chosen the best part. It will not be taken away from her. Martha was distracted. Distracted means to be pulled away, to be preoccupied, to be engrossed, and to be absorbed. And as I was reading that, and the Lord said, take away the concept of working in the kitchen, because that's what Martha was doing. This story was talking about Martha working in the kitchen. But as the Lord began to speak to me, he said that story today could very easily say Mary was sitting and talking to Jesus, but Martha was distracted by Facebook. She was preoccupied with her phone. She was engrossed in Pinterest. And that really shook me because I thought, Lord, I don't want to ever have anybody say Christine was so engrossed in her phone that she didn't see me walk past, or I missed sitting and talking to the Father. Jesus was not saying that Martha should never be in the kitchen. He never said that at all. He never said Martha should never cook. He was just saying that at that moment, Mary had chosen what was best, and that was to fellowship and to listen to him. And that, can I suggest that in order to live a satisfied life, we need to daily, even hourly, choose to put aside distractions and spend time with the Father. And because it was one of the questions that was asked, and I always thought, you know, as I said, when I was given the topic, I thought, wow, that's a tough topic in one sense, but such a powerful one, that I was asked practical ways that you can keep your life and technology balanced. And, you know, I've written out 10 things, which I think they're going to be in the email tomorrow. I'll just tell them really quickly to you. They're all regarding phones, but this represents everything that a phone represents. Having a no-phone policy at the dinner table. Don't charge your phone beside your bed, because then it can't be the last thing you see and the first thing you see in the morning. Customise your do not disturb settings. I'm grateful for a daughter that's helped me to do that. Don't check emails or socials first thing. Let God be the first point of contact for the day. Go back to a paper Bible. I have got my Bible here, and that's something the Lord's been speaking to me about, because he said, the more I read my Bible on my phone, and there's nothing wrong with it because it means I can read it anywhere. But if my main Bible reading is being done on a phone, it also means if texts or emails or notifications come through, it stops you. And I have had times, and I remember, I remember Peter was preaching an amazing sermon, and I always use my phone in church. Up till now, I've changed now. Up till now in church to have to read my Bible, and I was following along, and suddenly I got a notification that I'd got a text from somebody who I had not heard from for about 3 or 4 years. Now, I never went on the text. I wouldn't do that. But, you know, I spent the rest of the meeting thinking, oh, I wonder if they're okay. That's really unusual for them to text me. They know I'm in church on Sunday. Why would they text me in the middle of the meeting? All these things that because I was using... So now, and I remember thinking, I'm going to use my normal Bible, because then I can't be interrupted. Now I still read my Bible if I'm out, if I'm somewhere quick and I've got time and I think I want to read something. I love the Bible on the phone, but I've gone back more and more to using a normal Bible. Setting limits, as I said, for technology use. When you're with people, don't be like the girls were. Be fully present with your people you're with. Schedule time for texts and emails. I love a person who's had a great influence on me, Terry Seville Foy, Brother Jerry's daughter, said she schedules time every day when she reads her texts, and she doesn't read them any other time. Now, she gets a lot of texts. So she has a time when she sits down, reads all the texts that have come through that day, answers or does whatever, and that's it. She schedules time so they can't continually interrupt her. Enjoy moments and things without having to post them. And that just because you didn't post it didn't mean it didn't happen. We're getting that more and more and more. And that I used to feel I had to put everything up because that's what you did. I rarely put stuff up now, to be honest. Practice being unproductive. Practice just sitting and thinking, I don't have to be constantly busy. I don't have to be constantly being ambitious and thinking, what am I doing? What am I doing? I don't have to be in a tailspin all the time. I can just sometimes sit. Totally, totally sit. You know, we've had, as most of you know, quite a probably 10 days in our family with the attacks that have been on our grandkids. And last Thursday, I'd actually gone into the city to prepare my message. And at the very beginning of the preparation, I got a phone call to say that they were calling an ambulance for Ada. And I just remember thinking, God, you know. And so I went to prayer and we began to pray. We prayed for ages until we knew that we'd seen a breakthrough. I'm grateful for everybody else who's joined us in prayer through this entire journey this last couple of weeks. But, you know, when I went to sit down and then think, now I've got to quickly sit and prepare my message. And the Lord actually said to me, just sit. Just sit. You know, you've gone through a lot. Just sit. You'll have time to prepare your message. Just sit. And I just sat. We were at the Yarra and I just sat and I looked at the water. I didn't read. I didn't do anything. I just sat, literally. I didn't go to sleep. I just sat. I just thought, Lord. And it was just so peaceful. And I said, Lord, I'm just cutting out all the noise. We've had the enemy coming in, like, you know, pretty hard. We've been praying a lot. We've been texting a lot. I've got a message to prepare, but I'm just going to sit. And I'm just going to sit in your presence. And it was so beautiful and so refreshing. And I think that if I can just leave you with that thought, that all these things are amazing, all these things are wonderful, but that the minds, the brains, the ideas that God has given people, and they're so useful, but make sure that you're the adult. I've always had a phrase, you know, I've always said when I've spoken to mums, always remember who's the parent in the relationship. And Peter and I have used that phrase so many times when we've been speaking to people. Just remember who's the parent in the relationship. Who's the parent in your relationship with any kind of technology? And that use it and allow it to be a tool, but make sure you're the one that's controlling it. And make sure that you are that good Samaritan that you will see. Yeah. Make sure you're like Mary, that you won't be distracted or engrossed in other things. I'd like you to stand. I hope this has ministered to you. As I said, it's a different message because it's a very different topic, but something very close to my heart. I've asked the guys if they'll just, I know we've gone a couple of minutes over time and we're about to finish. We're an amazing morning tea, some really special things there. But I'd just like us to sing that song, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face. And the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. I don't know if we have the words, but it's four lines. You can pick it up. And let's live between those two tensions, living satisfied, but always believing for what God's got for us ahead. Thank you.